Welcome back to the zone. Let's go straight to
the Sticky's Fingers, hot and chicken,
Sticky's rockin' and rollin' Chicken Shack hotline.
There you go,
hotline. I don't know what a cotline is, but I don't ever want to know what cotline is.
Sticky Fingers, Chicken Shack, rock and roll.
Hotline. Do we want to start over? No, I think we'll just go straight to Barrett Salee. What's up, Barrett?
What's going on, guys?
Buddy. We're just talking a lot of Major League Baseball today. And, boy, that interleague play just gets me juiced, man. How about you? You been enjoying it?
I enjoy when the Braves get to play the Red Sox. I don't actually enjoy watching the Braves lose to the Red Sox as I did last night in person.
You can tell he's trying to poke at you.
No,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
no,
yeah, oh yeah, you are.
No, I deserve it. I mean, you know, those were two pretty embarrassing losses. I mean, the Braves had every right to win that game last night and let it slip away, and then Freddie Gonzalez went full Freddie 2 days ago and left Irvin Santana in too long, and David Ortiz made him pay. So, but still, you know, I enjoy this, like, the historical teams. You know, for when the Braves play the Red Sox, I enjoyed that. When they play the Yankees, I enjoyed that because we don't get to see that all that often.
Right.
You know, and if you get to make the trip to Fenway or Yankee Stadium, it's a fun little, event to see your team play in those settings.
When was the last time, or have they played? Talking historically. Hello, Barrett.
Yes, I'm here.
Sorry, I'd lost you. You kind of tapered out there towards the end.
The last time the Braves and Yankees played, I think, was 2010-ish, maybe. So, it happens a little bit, but not as much as it probably should. The idea of having two separate leagues and interleague play still being a novelty is still a little old to me. I mean, it should be, it's all the same. It's all baseball. You know, I like that they have an interleague series going on at all times right now, but there should be more of them because I like seeing different teams.
Before I ask you about the SEC spring meetings, one more thing. The DH in the NL seems to be catching some steam here. What do you think? Is that ever going to happen?
You asked me that 3 years ago, and I just said you're crazy. You asked me that now, and I'd say bring it on. And I think it
bring it on. I love it.
You know, it's the game needs a spark. No one likes to see small ball. I love small ball. I think, you know, the strategy that goes around, you know, a pitcher having to hit, you know, is it makes the NL way more interesting to me in terms of overall strategy. But most people don't care about that. You know, most people want to see runs. They want to see home runs. And extending careers of guys, you know, like for instance, the guy here, Brian McCann, he went to the Yankees because he needed to be at the DH, because he needed to play every day. So, offense, though, I said bring it on. I don't love it, but I think for the good of the game, it's that needs to happen.
I will miss watching guys like Bartolo Colon swinging and his helmet falling halfway off his head and his stomach poking out of his shirt when he's trying to stuff it back in. Those are entertaining parts of the game. Although, we saw that Dodgers pitcher the other night. Guy was pitching a no-hitter, gets up, gets on first, gets a hit, gets on first, and now he's on the bases. Of course, he's got a jacket on. But he's on the bases for about 20 minutes. I think the inning lasted 20, 27 minutes.
Wow.
And goes back out next inning and got his no-hitter spoiled.
Yeah, he lost it.
Yeah.
Well, last night, Giovanni Gallardo won the game on a pinch hit for the Brewers in the next inning. So it's a crazy game. It's fun, though.
You just never know. Okay, some SEC spring meetings. Right out of the chute, let me ask, what do you think are the most important issues that are being discussed down there this year?
Well, I think, you know, the autonomy stuff really hasn't hit the forefront yet, but I think that's going to be the most important discussion. I think that's going to start today with the ADs because, honestly, the coaches don't really care. They don't really have any say in what goes on in terms of autonomy. So I think that's going to be the most important thing that goes on. I think it's a chance for the SEC to sort of get on the same page with itself to sort of, you know, sort of lay out the landscape of college football in an era of autonomy. You know, I think that's a big deal because it's not just the SEC, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC. They all have to get on the same page too. And if there starts to be some sort of consensus among the conferences of what truly the definition of autonomy means, not just, you know, mythical things like full cost of attendance, how much are they going to get paid? How many years are people going to be covered after playing college football. I think those are, you know, the things that need to be discussed now, not just the concepts, but the actual nuts and bolts of it. And I think you'll see that discussed today and tomorrow. And by the time Media Days rolls around, it wouldn't surprise me at all if all of the different conference commissioners are all in the same picture. I think that's the biggest deal that's going on. The other stuff, scheduling.
One more thing on that autonomy. Do you think that they already have in place what they want to change and they have to vote on solidifying it, or are they still deciding what they want to change and how they're going about doing that?
I think they know what they want. They know they want full class attendance. They know they want, you know, some medical reform. They know they want, you know, some different, you know, options with tickets and player transportation and things of that nature, family transportation, player welfare type things. Mostly, they know concepts. I don't know if they know the actual specifics yet. And I think that's what this sort of off-season of spring meetings and various conferences is going to do. It's going to allow them to sort of go to the NCAA with specifics when they meet in August and say, hey, look, this is what we mean when we mean full cost attendance. This is what we mean for enhanced concussion testing. So at that point, they're not just fictional ideas. They're actually real things that are going to be discussed and have a cost attached to them. And I think when they see the cost, they're going to say, hey, look, you want to take on that cost? That's fine. I think everybody will be all for it. I think the lower schools want it. I think the big schools want it. I think the NCAA wants to sort of get its hands off of everything. So I think it's up to the conferences to sort of, you know, come to the NCAA with a proposal and see if it'll fly. And I think it will, because they're not going to, you know, try to push for too much.
Barrett Salee, join us on the hotline. What else do you see that's important coming out of this week?
Well, I think, you know, the full scheduling thing is not that big of a deal. I know the FCS debate sort of got sparked up yesterday, and some out-of-conference games sort of popped up, too. I think the biggest thing outside of autonomy is, you know, what is an early signing period really all about? I think in the last 4 or 5 years in the offseason, you know, these meetings have been dominated by realignment and or some other things like bridge scheduling. They really haven't had time to discuss, you know, what the pros and cons to the different ideas for an early signing period actually are. I don't know if there's ever going to be a consensus, because I think there are pros and cons to no early signing period. I think there are pros and cons to December 1st. I think there are pros and cons to August 1st. So I think what this will do is allow everybody to get to a closed-door meeting, discuss what they need to discuss, and then I don't think there are real strong feelings, you know, one way or the other, but I think it's smart if the SEC comes out and says, hey, look, we're pushing for August 1st, or we're pushing for December 1st, or whatever. So they have, you know, a really good idea as to, if they're going to do an early signing period, what exactly the specifics are, I think.
What will be the pros and cons on that?
I think for the pros, there are pros and cons for each group. For the high school students, the pros of August 1st is that you could, you know, get it out of the way before your senior year. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to deal with recruiting during your senior year of high school. You know, the cons for a player is that, you know, maybe teams fill up their slots in advance, you know, and you have a great senior year, you know, and you don't have a spot in an Alabama or an Auburn or LSU or whatever. For the coaches, sort of the same thing. They can sort of lay the foundation for a class, you know, early if they want to, and sell that the rest of the way. The cons are, you know, what if you offer a quarterback and his senior year he gets hurt or he tanks and forgets how to throw the football? That stuff like that happens. So, I think there's no right or wrong answer to it. And it's an interesting debate, because I think that people will give a lot. I think people that are for August 1st may give and say December 1st is fine. It's I think, really open for a lot of negotiations, which I think is what's going to be going on this afternoon.
Barrett, you definitely saw the attention that Will Muschamp got yesterday after his comments about the FCS team. Do you think people didn't take it as serious since they lost to an FCS team last year? Maybe if someone else had come out and said that, it would have been more of a, well, let's look at this. But is it kind of being thrown to the side since he lost to one, and it could be more of a more seen as more of a bitter case instead of something that more teams are going to be trying to do?
Yeah, he's probably not the guy that needs to be making that campaign slate stance.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think everything that everyone said yesterday about FCS schools is right. I mean, it's hard to schedule. I mean, it really is, especially with limited plots and limited weeks to work with. So, you know, I think, look, schools need FCS opponents to an extent, especially if you have a big stadium. You sort of need seven home games.
So, you know, I think sometimes just sort of, what do you do? Do you try to, you know, lose out on some money and schedule a home-and-home with somebody who, from a Power 5 conference that may not be that good but still a Power 5 conference member? Or do you take your home game, take your gate revenue, and you know, keep that bottom line? I think that's important. I think, you know, to me, the controversy sparked up because there's not a lot of controversy going on, because there aren't scheduling or realignment things going on in Dutton this week. I think the FCS debate is pretty thick layer. It's got some layers to it because, yeah, you know, there are some pros and cons to scheduling FCS teams. There's also some legal issues. The state of South Carolina requires that South Carolina and Clemson play an FBS program or FCS program within that state every single year. Hmm. That's why it's South Carolina State. That's why, you know, the Citadel, Wofford, all those teams are always on, Furman always on those schedules. It's not just something that the SEC can say, oh, we're going to change our policy. It's a little more complicated than that because there are state rules or state laws in play, not just in South Carolina, but other places too. So, to me, that's more of a controversy that sort of sparked up because there's still a lot of controversies going on.
Speaking of controversy, a guy who usually creates controversy didn't yesterday. Steve Spurrier was just mentioned as playing golf with Hugh Freeze and Gus Malzahn. So my question to you is, of all the coaches, what three would you want to play with if you had the choice?
Oh, well, Spurrier would be on that list.
Of course. He's a given.
Of course.
Of course. Yes. Okay, so minus Spurrier. Who else?
Minus Spurrier.
He's going to be a busy guy because he's on everyone's list.
Yeah.
That's right. He's going to be playing a lot of golf. Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of golf courses down there, so that helps. But
I would say, after Spurrier, I would say it'd be a lot of fun to get Malzahn, Saban, and a foursome. And then, you know, after them, you know, oh, I don't know, Bielema, just to see what he says.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I'd love to, you know, by the eighth or ninth hole, you know, Cartwright may have come around a couple times, but Bielema may be
a couple drinks in. That'd be a lot of fun.
What about Les?
Oh, yeah. Forget Brett. Les, for sure.
Yeah.
How could I overlook him? I want Les Miles in there in my life.
Yeah.
Barrett, man, I appreciate you for coming on, buddy.
All right, thanks.
All right, have a good week. Barrett Salee, Bleacher.